Radio.com.
When you're shamed by the appearance of your teeth, simple things like smiling can seem embarrassing. A rejuvenated look is what you need. At Modern American Dentistry, you can get the perfect smile with a makeover using supermodel veneers and crowns. Simply tune in to Get Your Smile On with Dr. Joel Gold starting June 10th to learn more.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am The Advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, You Decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Get Your Smile On with Dr. Joel Gold, your peek into oral health, cosmetic dentistry, and wellness solutions from Modern American Dentistry.
All right, everybody, that must be me. Welcome to Get Your Smile On. I am Dr. Joel Gould, your wellness dentist, and we are broadcasting live from beautiful Manhattan Beach, California. Last week we went live, we had a little bit of a technical glitch, and it put my skills as a live broadcaster to the test. Tonight, hopefully, we'll have none of those problems. I'm excited to get to my guest. And what I want to just sort of talk about for a few minutes is that we've been talking about my health and my issues regarding my sleep apnea and how that investigation took me down a strange road that led me to a very interesting vitamin called vitamin D. Vitamin D is not a vitamin, it's a hormone. And for any of our listeners, you've heard me talk to different people on this topic, and it is, in my opinion, going to be one of the largest public health issues facing this country and the entire Western world. And tonight, I'm bringing to you one of the authorities on vitamin D, and he is a medical doctor, started out early on with an anti-smoking campaign back in a time and a place where people smoked. He refused to see patients that were smokers unless it was an emergency. He has been an activist in so many different ways. I'm going to talk to him about his career and very interesting guest. My guest tonight is Dr. John Cannell, and I'm going to bring him on right away. Dr. Cannell, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, well, welcome to Get Your Smile On. I want to talk to you about so many things, but I want to let my listeners have a little bit of background about you. And I'm really curious, you know, you've done so many incredible, interesting things. You've been an activist for so many good causes. Where does it come from? Well, let's talk about you first. So you're a graduate from the University of North Carolina for your medical degree. And
yeah.
From there, you worked in, I think, emergency medicine. And tell me about the anti-smoking campaign that you were at the forefront of.
Well, in 1982, I noticed that I was in West Virginia. I had a clinic in the coal fields of West Virginia, and I noticed that all the miners smoke. And to make a long story short, the miners view black lung disability as their retirement program. They don't have a retirement program. So black lung disability is their retirement program. And the miners had learned a long time ago that unless you smoke, you wouldn't get black lung disability. And
wow.
So, it was incredible. All the miners smoked. And so my anti-smoking campaign stopped when I realized that the system had, because of pulmonary function tests and the way they were conducted, the system was actually making the miners smoke so they could get their disability retirement.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Okay, so then you took a leap into the school testing issues. How did that come about?
Well, I just always had this grain of social activism. I don't know where it comes from. But the public schools in the United States, of course, are not doing a good job. And I noticed one day that all the 55 counties in West Virginia were claiming they were above the national average on their standardized tests. And I said, oh, great, that's good news. And then I stopped and thought about it, and I said, if West Virginia is above average, what state is below average? So I had my nurse and my X-ray technician and other people in my clinic call Mississippi and Alabama and South Carolina and Arkansas and every place we could think of that might have low test scores. And we ended up calling the State Department of Education of all 55 states, and they were sort of suspicious of it, so we had to tell them a story. We said, we were thinking of moving there. Would you send us your test results? And we got 50 glossy brochures from all 50 states showing how high their test scores were and that they were above the national average. So what I did is discover that all 50 states were claiming they were above the national average.
Wow. All right. So basically, you don't like social injustice. I love that. And you really like to get behind your causes, which is really interesting. So I want to flash forward to, you know, later in your career, you became a psychiatrist. And then from my sort of work investigation on you, you became really interested in nutrition. How did that sort of come about?
Well, before that, I spent 10 years. After the education thing failed, I was not able to achieve any change in education. But I went into psychiatry, and psychiatry was going through a very dangerous hysterical phase about sexual abuse. And they were doing things called recovered memory therapy, where you would go in to see a psychiatrist with anxiety, and the psychiatrist would tell you that the cause of that anxiety was that you were sexually abused as a child and you've forgotten it. And there were tens of thousands of psychotherapists in the United States practicing recovered memory therapy. And they promised if you just came back 100 times, we'll get to the bottom of this and recover the memories of your abuse and then you'll get better. That was the promise. And many people believed this, and they recovered the memories, and then they went home and accused their aged parents of the most vile crimes you can think of based on these recovered memories. And it led to what's called false memory syndrome, with the recognition that if you believe something to be true strong enough, you'll get a memory of it. That's the way memory works. Memory is reconstructive. It's not a video cam. It's reconstructive. Your memory reconstructs itself all the time to fit what you believe. And so these psychiatrists were doing recovered memory therapy and destroying thousands and thousands of American families, because once you go home and say to your father, you sexually abused me when I was 3 years old, I mean, that family is never the same. That father can never trust that daughter again. I mean, it's a permanent change. And so I devised a strategy to end recovered memory therapy in which involved lawyers and lawsuits. But the end result was that recovered memory therapy was discredited, and the therapists who were practicing recovered memory therapy could no longer get malpractice coverage. And so recovered memory therapy ended just as quickly as it began, and we haven't heard a peep from it since.
Right. Okay, well, I know what's interesting. I mean, I'm speaking from Manhattan Beach, and I remember it was the McMartin daycare scandal that brought this to the forefront, was it not?
Yes. It was, yeah. And those people were all innocent. Nothing happened there. That was all the product of recovered memory therapy. Children are especially prone to recovered memory therapy. And if you think back on the 90s, there were about 12 to 15 daycare cases around the country. And those stopped as soon as the recovered memory therapy stopped. So if you think about it, there haven't been any daycare cases in 15 years.
Yeah.
So they stopped, yeah. Those people were all innocent. All those people accused of daycare case sexual abuse were innocent.
Terrible. Wow. Okay, so how did that get us to the next cause? Because so this was a success. You achieved something. You did good for society in general. And then what was your next move?
Well, with the death of recovered memory therapy, I didn't have anything to do. And so I was always interested in nutrition, and I spent a couple of years just reading about what was known about nutrition on the National Library of Medicine. And I ran across vitamin D and realized a couple of things. That one, people treated it like it was a vitamin. That is, that you're supposed to get it in your diet. And that's not how humans get vitamin D. They get it from their skin, from sunlight striking their skin. It's not a vitamin. It's a pro-hormone that's made in your skin, and it's turned into a powerful steroid hormone in your body that regulates all kinds of metabolism. And so the recommendations at that time were 200 units a day was adequate vitamin D. And if you go out in the summer and sunbathe with your swimming suit on for about half an hour at the midday sun, you'll make about 20,000 units of vitamin D. So it seemed to me that nature was saying that you can make 20,000, and the government was saying you can take 200. And it seemed to me you had to sort of believe nature or the government.
Right. Well, I know in previous podcasts we've talked a lot about vitamin D, and I've sort of laid a lot of the groundwork about the different studies showing the increased incidence of disease the further you get away from the equator. So this is something that my listeners are aware of, and so, you know, everything that you're saying, it's great to hear you say it because you're an authority on this. So you recognize that at that point in time, was this sort of something that was getting known or little known in general? Was this more of a revelation to you, or was there already an understanding that this might be an issue that needs to be discussed further?
Well, there were some vitamin D researchers who believed that vitamin D was really important, but they didn't get any publicity. Then nobody knew they existed. And so I started a nonprofit, the Vitamin D Council. And the idea of the Vitamin D Council was simple. We wanted to educate professionals and the lay public about the importance of vitamin D. That was our goal. And we have drawn from 200 visitors a year on our Google Analytics to almost 4 million users, unique users a year on our website. So we have taken an active role in educating people about vitamin D.
Yeah. Well, just so you know, I came across all this semi by chance, having sleep apnea. I investigated it. I came up with a whole bunch of different topics, and when I came to the vitamin D issue, yours was one of the first websites that I came across, and, you know, I had no idea what this was. This was at a time when I was just beginning to discover really that vitamin D is something so completely different than any other vitamin and how important of a chemical this is in our bodies. And it was really refreshing. Your site was informative. It had interesting stories. And it's kind of one of those things where, as I started to get into this, I really couldn't believe that as a practicing dentist and an educated person and just living in two different countries, I had still really heard nothing of this. And it was really kind of shocking for me to have these revelations that this could be such a major shift in our healthcare that this is still not known. So obviously more visitors is great, but you know, did you think this was going to get known more quickly, or are you surprised at how slow it's been and for people to sort of get the message?
Well, it's been slow in political time, but in scientific time, it's been quite quickly. There are now 10 times more vitamin D blood tests being drawn by doctors than there were 3 years ago. There are 20 times more Americans taking vitamin D supplements than there were 3 years ago.
Okay.
So there's rapid growth in it. There's an old adage in science that says science progresses one funeral at a time.
Right. Wow. Well, you know, okay, so as I got into this, I started just generally asking my patients, hey, have you had your vitamin D level checked? And what's funny is some people got offended and said, what, my vitamin D, mine's fine, I drink milk, with the understanding right. that they think that they're getting, you know, all their vitamin D from milk, or I eat healthy. It was almost like an accusation that I was saying, hey, you're not a healthy person if you don't know this. The correct answer is I have no idea unless you've had a test, because no matter what you think, people think they're getting lots of vitamin D, they think they're exposed to the sun, and then when we test them here at the office, we find out that they're really deficient, and so many people are, which leads me sort of to the next topic, is about sun exposure. Now, we've discussed in the past that vitamin D supplements are great, and that technically they're about half as effective as vitamin D that you make yourself from the sun, but there's a huge controversy with sun exposure, then the dermatologists, and what I have learned is called the anti-sun lobby. So how does, you know, the anti-sun lobby, it sounds kind of ridiculous that there's a group of people who are organized saying stay out of the sun. And, you know, I know that you're not advocating going into the sun because that opens up a whole different can of worms, but how did this, do you have any idea of how this all started with this, you know, anti-sun lobby?
Well, actually, we do recommend going into the sun, and I'll get to that in a minute. I want to get back to the vitamin D blood test. On our website, we sell an in-home vitamin D test kit that is run by the single most experienced professor of vitamin D measurement in the world. And it happens also to be the least expensive in-home vitamin D test you can buy in the United States. So people, if they want to know their vitamin D level, go onto our website. Just Google Vitamin D Council, and you'll come to our website, and you can find out what your vitamin D level is in the privacy of your home. In terms of sun exposure, we recommend safe, sensible sun exposure. It's not clear from the studies now what percentage of the benefit on these studies is due to vitamin D and what percentage is due to other effects of the sun that are beneficial that we don't know about.
Right.
And we know there are some. Nitric oxide is an example. Melatonin is another example. There are beta endorphins are another example. But there's things that sunlight does to human skin that are undiscovered yet, that we don't know about. And so the safe thing to do is to sunbathe when the time is right for brief periods, 10, 20 minutes, 5, 10 minutes on each side. And that way you'll get the benefits of sun without any of the risk associated with excessive sun exposure. But at the same time, we recommend that people take 5,000 international units of vitamin D a day, because people cannot sunbathe every day. They just can't do it. They're working. You know, you just can't do it.
Well, okay, so
that's what we recommend. It's real simple. We recommend safe, sensible sun exposure and also 5,000 units of vitamin D a day, with the largest meal of the day for the rest of your life.
Okay. So I want to go back to a couple of things. So first of all, I totally agree with you. And I work in Manhattan Beach, very close to the beach. I have tried on my lunch break to go get some safe sun exposure, and I don't want to do it in my parking lot. I don't want patients to be saying, what is Dr. Gruhl doing with his shirt off lying in the parking lot? So it's pretty much impossible to get that sun exposure, except for, you know, your weekends. And then for all the people who live in climates where we're not, their sun isn't available every day, it makes it even more difficult. You know, and so what I'm kind of bothered by is that the whole dermatologist anti-sun lobby, because we're basically saying put sunscreen on after that 10 or 15 minutes if you're going to be out in the sun. Now, I kind of want to talk to you about UVA, UVB radiation and whether wearing sunscreen and not being exposed to UVB rays is giving people a false sense of safeness when they're spending all day out in the sun and they're not getting the beneficial effects of the UVB rays that produce the vitamin D, but they are getting all the radiation damage from UVA rays and not burning because they have the sunscreen on. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, well, that's changed. The sunscreens on sale today block both UVA and UVB. It was a big change just a year ago. But the revelation that for years and years sunscreen blocked UVB but did not block UVA was sort of a scandal in the sunscreen industry. One thing that should be noted, that the incidence of skin cancer has continued to increase with the use of sunblock. So you would think that the use of sunblock, which has been going on for 20 or 30 years in the United States, would have resulted in reduced skin cancers. It has not.
Right. And so what's your feeling on why that is? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's because when you put on sunblock, you block production of vitamin D. And I think vitamin D is actually involved in the prevention of skin cancers. If you get safe, sensible sun exposure and you don't burn, sunburning is the real villain here. If you sunburn, you made a mistake. But safe, sensible sun exposure raises your vitamin D level and actually protects the skin and has an anti-aging effect.
Right. Well, these are things that I have definitely I've been bringing attention to, because as I started to investigate this further, the number of things that are affected by vitamin D is fascinating. And I know that one of the things we talked about was autoimmune diseases. And I've shared with my listening audience that I do have Crohn's disease, and this has been an issue my entire life. And on reflection of my growing up, I really now believe that my health issues were primarily caused by vitamin D deficiency in conjunction with my sleep disorder. I've had, you know, terrible clogged airway most of my life. And I think that set me up to be a victim of Crohn's disease, which is, you know, in my family history. And one of the things that we talked about that I found so shocking was that as my vitamin D level went from below 20 up to 30, my clenching, grinding of my jaw decreased. And then when I got to just over 35, my Crohn's symptoms pretty much faded away. And so right now I believe, you know, it's hard to tell because I don't want to do a blood test every second week, although I'm curious to see how I'm supplementing myself both with sun exposure and supplements as to how, because I want to get to a 60 at least, and I'd love to get to a 60 or a 70. And you sort of mentioned that it wouldn't be unusual for someone like myself to continue to have those symptoms disappear. Is that something that you've known, that you've seen in the literature?
It's not in the literature, but it's something I've seen repeatedly, that autoimmune disorders, as long as the autoimmune destruction is still going on, as long as it's still present, the vitamin D has an effect on autoimmune destruction, whether it be lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, and that it helps in those situations. It doesn't help in autoimmune disorders, in autoimmune diseases where tissue is already destroyed. Like in type 1 diabetes, the beta cells of the pancreas are already destroyed, and vitamin D won't bring it back. Or with multiple sclerosis, the insulating sheath of the nerve, the myelin, is actually destroyed, and vitamin D will not bring it back. So it has to be an active disease if there's hope for vitamin D. And vitamin D does not work in all autoimmune disorders that are active. So not all Crohn's disease patients will notice an improvement in their disease with higher levels.
Interesting.
And
okay.
We don't know why.
Well, there's still a lot of things we don't know. It is 2015, and we're just talking about this now. So, you know, in cases of MS and in cases of autism, you know, is it your opinion or does the literature show that an earlier intervention with vitamin D supplements or sun exposure is helpful?
Well, with my autism theory, yes, that's a theory, but it's not been proven, of course, because it's such a new theory. But that's my theory, is that the earlier you intervene. In fact, I just reviewed a paper today that's going to be published. If you've had one autistic child, a couple have had one autistic child, their risk of getting another autistic child is 20%. That's a well-known figure. So a friend of mine did a study in which he recruited pregnant women and gave them all 7,000 units of vitamin D during their pregnancy and gave them 7,000 units a day when they were breastfeeding, so the breast milk was rich in vitamin D. And then when the infant stopped breastfeeding and started eating food, the child was given 1,000 units a day until he was 3 years old. And they did tests on these children, these vitamin D children, for autism, and they found that the incidence was closer to 2% than 20% in the vitamin D supplemented mothers and children.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty incredible. Here in my practice, we've got a lot of different, a lot of pregnant women. This is an area where there's a lot of young families. And I ask across the board about vitamin D. Some doctors are suggesting supplementation to these pregnant women, and some have no clue at all. And I just find it really interesting that we're still at a state where this is just, you know, it's not known. So,
well, it's not what our end game, well, at least my personal end game, it's not the Vitamin D Council's end game, because that's a nonprofit corporation that I happen to work for, but I don't run it. It's run by a board of directors. But personally, my end game is through the legal system. When the literature becomes more clear that vitamin D deficiency causes autism, what we need is a family with an autistic child to sue their obstetrician, saying, you should have known to give me vitamin D supplements because you should have known that would have prevented the autism.
So that's
now,
what it takes in America, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it takes in America. As soon as there were a couple of cases like that that were successful, every obstetrician in the country would be giving their pregnant woman vitamin D. That's how change happens in the United States.
Well, it's
we,
very
we like to think it happens scientifically, but the legal system has a lot to do with it.
Well, it's always money. When it comes down to it, money is the thing that talks. And part of why I've been enjoying my role here as you know, a wellness dentist talking about these different health issues is that coming from Canada, I have a different perspective on what the medical system should be. And being a dentist, I also am under far less influence from pharmaceutical companies and their studies that are geared to get doctors to prescribe their medications. So my perspective on this is kind of more of one of shock that this is America and this is really what it takes. How far away do you think we are from the real mainstream, and that would include every medical doctor or reasonably every medical doctor and obstetrician knowing this? Where do you think we are in on the scale of you know, the tipping point of this?
Decades.
Jeez, okay.
I won't live to see it.
Oh boy. Well, if I have anything to do with it, hopefully you will, because this is something that it upsets me a lot, knowing that in theory, and of course we can't prove anything and I can't go back in time, but knowing the life that I had a pretty miserable youth from age 12 to about 17, and it was pretty horrific. And if doing this podcast and having you on the show can even get one parent to take their kids to somebody who will help them supplement their vitamin D or will go online and start to do this on their own, then I will feel satisfied that this is worthwhile for me. Just, you know, knowing that I potentially had a completely preventable disease that shaped my entire life, it's pretty terrible. And I want to come out as strongly as possible, you know, to let everybody know, on our worst case scenario, even if we're completely wrong, the idea that the sun gives you 20,000 international units a day, there really should be no issue with people taking 3,000 or 5,000 or 7,000. And what I found is most of my patients, the more I educate them, the more willing they are to trust me and say, okay, I'll take 10,000, instead of saying 10,000, that's tons, you know. It's a battle of communication.
Do you know how much 10,000 units is?
Well, it's half. Yeah.
It's 250 micrograms.
That's a pretty small amount.
Right. It sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
10,000 units. But
yeah.
250 micrograms doesn't sound like much at all.
No.
But that's what it is. So part of the problem is this antiquated way we use of measuring the content of vitamin D using international units. If we used micrograms, it would be much similar.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here, but this is a question that I asked you, and this is a question that I've asked myself. And I don't believe that vitamin D is the cure to everything, but after everything I've learned, I believe that it's the basic vitamin D deficiency is really the instigating causes of so many diseases. How do you feel? What do you think? What would you say to somebody who has sort of they haven't been aware of this before? What's the most compelling information you could give to somebody to make them understand that this is of critical importance and we all need to pay attention?
Only that it's not a vitamin. It was never made to be put in the mouth. It was made to be put in the skin. And if you don't sunbathe, you're deficient unless you take a supplement. It's that simple. Unless you sunbathe, you're vitamin D deficient unless you take a vitamin D supplement.
Okay. And then in the list of issues that are caused by vitamin D deficiency, is there anything in that category that really stands out to you that you want everybody to know, you know, in theory?
Only that everybody's vitamin D level is different and you can't know unless you test it.
Right.
And the magic number is about 50 or 60. That's what you want your vitamin D level to be at. And of the people listening to this podcast, I bet only maybe 10% of them have a vitamin D level of 50 or 60.
Yeah, I would say it's probably even less. We tested my entire team here and nobody was over 20, not one single person.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
That doesn't surprise me. And that's in Manhattan Beach in Southern California.
Yes, it is. All right. So, and Maria, my producer, is listening. She's one of my patients as well. And we tested her. I knew that she was going to be deficient. She was, Maria, I'm going to spill the beans. She was 13. And so we are supplementing Maria. We're going to get her some vitamin D and get her back to health. So,
good.
Dr. Cannell, thank you so much for coming on this podcast, and I really appreciate you know, all the incredible things that you've done for society. I think we need a lot more people like you, just so that fairness and honesty and integrity can be restored to this country and to the world.
Well, thanks for saying that. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on the program.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you, sir. I look forward to hopefully speaking to you again in the future.
Okay. Bye now.
All right. Good night. All right, everybody, that was Dr. John Cannell, and you can find more information about him and the Vitamin D Council at www.vitaminDcouncil. Obviously, we do use some of their tests here in my office. I didn't want to get into drawing blood. Going to the dentist is scary enough, but this is a test that we have administered in our office because I'm so curious about this, And one of the things that we didn't talk to him about, but we're going to be reviewing, is how sleep apnea and vitamin D are interrelated. So on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening tonight to Get Your Smile On. I look forward to speaking to you all next week. And have a great night. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to Get Your Smile On with Dr. Joel Gold. Keep smiling and tune in next time to listen to Dr. Joel Gold reveal the secrets of cosmetic dentistry and wellness.
ForRadio.com.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
When you're shamed by the appearance of your teeth, simple things like smiling can seem embarrassing. A rejuvenated look is what you need. At Modern American Dentistry, you can get the perfect smile with a makeover using supermodel veneers and crowns. Simply tune in to Get Your Smile On with Dr. Joel Gold starting June 10th to learn more.
Trust Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trust Rio's, our only limit is your imagination. That's Trust Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535 or find us on the web, TrustRioSilver.com. Proud to be part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
ForRadio.com.